Welcome to This Messianic Jewish Life. My name is Dorothy Gittleman, and in this podcast, I'll share my Messianic Jewish life experiences as we explore the diversity of practice across the Messianic Jewish world. Welcome back to our podcast. This week, my guest is Susie Linette. I met Susie online before I met her in person this February. Susie Linette leads the Havara Devar Shalom in Southern California. She approaches the scriptures and her faith with a crazy balance of scholarship and humor. Let's meet Susie Linette. Well, welcome, Susie, to This Messianic Life.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
So can you tell us, me and my listening audience, a little bit about your life story? How were you raised? And what was your path to Messianic Judaism?
Okay, I was raised in what I would call a very culturally Jewish home. My parents were not specifically religious. We did not go to the synagogue every Friday night or Saturday morning for Shabbat. But we did go if there was our bat mitzvah or some special event. And we went on the high holy days and, holiday types of things, but we were not regularly in the synagogue. However, to use the phrase, my parents were very religious about my training into Judaism. Once a week, they packed up me and my two younger sisters and took us to the synagogue for our classes in training, dropped us off. They would go out to breakfast and then come back and pick us up when we were done. And on the East Coast, and that many years ago, I'm 68, so my childhood training was a long time ago. Services for children and training was quite different than what I think most people are used to today. Our classes were 2 to 2.5 hours long. We had textbooks. As we got older, we were required to do term papers and other sorts of projects. We had report cards. And if we did not pass the curriculum, we were retained for another year to repeat it.
Sounds like real school. A school program.
It was. And in the last year of that training, my rabbi actually taught the class. These classes were on Sunday, not on Saturday.
Right.
And he taught the class. Well, at the same time, by that time, we had moved to California from the East Coast. And I was in culture shock because I had grown up in a community that was very Jewish. Public schools were closed on the holidays, that sort of thing. And now I was in a town where I was one of only two or three Jews in the school.
Oh, wow.
In fact, in high school, kids threw pennies at me to see if the cheap Jew would bend over to pick them up.
Wow.
So now I'm in training with this rabbi at the synagogue in another city. And my next door neighbors came over and asked me if I would babysit for them. So I said, sure. And I knew the kids were well behaved. I'm a teenager. They're going to pay me.
Yeah. Fine.
I'll put them to bed early and do my homework and get paid for doing what I have to do anyway.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Well, they were very evangelical, I discovered, and they were going to a Bible study once a week, which is why they needed me so regularly. When they came back, they would start to share with me. And, I listened politely.
Yeah.
But that was about it until one night. They evidently had spoken to someone and discovered they really needed to emphasize out of what the church calls the Old Testament.
Yep.
And they shared Genesis 1:26 with me, "Let us make man in our image." And if it's there, why is it plural, Susie? If you don't believe in the Trinity, why is it us and our rather than God saying, "Let me make man in my image"?
Right.
Well, I went to the rabbi since I was taking the class from him, and not real sweet, I suppose. These Christians are trying to convert me, And at least he was honest. He did not have an answer. He said, "The sages do not understand." Well, while I appreciated his integrity and not just making something up, it didn't give this very teenage person the ammunition to go back and tell these people they were all wrong.
Right.
So I listened and they taught more. But then eventually, of course, the kids grew up, didn't need a babysitter. I got out of high school. I graduated. I went off to college. You know, and we lost touch with each other. Eventually, I got out of college. I got my degree from USC in occupational therapy, did my interning boards, all the kinds of professional development you do, and started to work. At one point, I switched jobs and at the same time bought my home. And a couple of months later, right when escrow closed, the new organization lost funding and I was out of work.
Whoa.
So now I'm laying in bed in this new house with a mortgage, no savings, because that was the down payment.
Yeah.
And no income. And did all sorts of things, multi-level marketing schemes, everything, just to try to put food on the table while I looked for work. One night I lay down in bed and I screamed at the ceiling and I said, God, if you really exist, this would be a fill in the blank good time to prove it. All right. And so I got up in the morning. By then I had found a new job, but considerably less pay. So
yeah,
things were still very tight. I got up in the morning and I was getting dressed and the phone rang before cell phones. This was 41 years ago. And this friend that I had met in multi-level marketing called me and she said, Susie, on your way home from work tonight, come on up to the house. I'll feed you dinner. Well, I'm broke. If you feed me, I will come.
Yeah.
and then she said, because it's time for me to tell you about God. And I froze because I knew what I had just screamed, feeling. Well, it turns out while I was screaming that, Lois was discovering that I was Jewish and had felt a call to share the gospel, the good news, the Besorah with Jewish people. So I go up to her house. We eat. She had bought a Bible for me. And she said, let's turn to Genesis 1:26. That exact verse.
Oh,
now,
wow.
I was 27. I was 15 when this other couple had shared that verse with me. So it's 12 years later, and she opens to the exact same passage in a different county with people who don't know each other. The day after I screamed, God, prove yourself to be real.
Yeah.
It got my attention, shall we say.
Wow.
We continued to study and she continued to share. She was a nurse who worked night shift at a locked psychiatric unit. And of course, I was working days. And so it morphed into this thing that I would come home from work, sleep for a couple of hours, get up, get dressed, drive to the hospital. She would let me in through the back door to the nurse's station. And we would study together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go home, sleep a couple more hours and go to work. She finally had to confess one night when one of the patients got up, took one look at me. I'm a dwarf. I'm only 4'1" and said, oh, I need more meds. And then the next morning told his psychiatrist about the funny little people running around the hospital at night.
Oh.
So Lois had to confess what was going on. Anyway, as time went on, I knew what I had to do, but of course, knowing what it would do to my family, knowing all the culture, knowing just all the upheaval public profession of faith would cause, it was one foot in, one foot out. Finally, I went to work one morning at the new job I had. And by the way, while I was studying all of this, I never missed a day of work and I got a 17% pay raise. So the financial issue was taken care of.
Nice.
God will take care of you while you are seeking him.
That's
the message there. So I go to work this morning and my boss showed up to give me my performance appraisal. The other therapist with whom I shared the office called in sick. So now I had a double caseload, or at least had to call the parents of her kids and say,
right.
Hey, the state showed up to audit our records and one of the orthopedic surgeons showed up on the wrong day demanding to see kids that were not there. And all of them at once, because they all determined that each one was the priority.
Right.
Well, finally, I ran to the bathroom because all of these men, every single one of them was a man, could not follow me to the ladies' room, or at least not back in those days. And so I ran to the ladies' room simply because it got me away from them for a couple of minutes while I could figure out what I was going to do. And I go in there, and they do call it the throne room.
Yes.
So sitting on the porcelain throne, I cried out to Yeshua, to Jesus, and I said, I need you. Mm. I need you. That's the only way I'm going to handle this. And it's the only way I'm going to handle my life. I need you. And so, yes, I received Bible education in a locked psych hospital and accepted the Lord sitting on the toilet. And obviously, God does have a sense of humor.
That is really awesome. And how did your family react when you eventually talked to them about it?
It took a while. This was in February that I came to faith. I didn't tell my family until September. The following September, mm-hmm. I just needed time to get stronger, to figure out what to do. And I sent a letter to my parents, mm-hmm. knowing, basically wanted to help tone things down. If I called or showed up, I knew there would be a lot of yelling and screaming. Yeah. And I didn't want anybody to have to walk that back. Yeah. Where I figured if I sent a letter, they could yell and scream, but it wouldn't be in front of me. And they wouldn't have to later on deal with how they're going to handle that reaction.
Right.
So I did it by letter. And a week or two later, I got a letter back from my mother. And basically her statement was, why are you doing to yourself what Hitler failed to do with his ovens?
Mm.
Of course, most of us know that Hitler had a Bible on his desk, quoted Martin Luther, and yeah. said he was doing it for God. So he was the representation of what the church was to mm-hmm. my family.
Wow.
You know, and they lived through World War II, and right. my grandparents on both sides emigrated and, you know, got out, and we lost relatives in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
So to them, that was very real. It wasn't this history thing that we may or may not learn about. It was right. life experience.
Right. Wow.
So that's how, but it took about 3 years
okay.
before they even spoke to me.
Okay.
I would send gifts for holidays and birthdays, and they would send them back unopened.
Okay.
Finally, we started talking again, and my father has passed a year and a half ago mm-hmm. at the age of 96, but 3 weeks before he died, on the phone, I was able to pray with him to receive his Messiah.
Oh, wow.
So I cherish that, of course.
Yeah.
My mother is 93, still not a believer, still refusing to talk about anything relating to the Lord, mm-hmm. not even the Jewish perspective. Absolutely okay. nothing. So oh. that's where we are.
Wow. This is, I love hearing people's stories. So thank you so much for sharing. Can you tell me a little bit about the ministry that you lead now?
Okay, I lead a ministry called Devar Shalom, which in Hebrew means word of peace. The ministry started out of a Bible study that I was teaching, which then became a curriculum for a Bible Institute, which then eventually morphed into some regular teaching. What we do, we meet on Friday nights for Erev Shabbat, and it's open to anyone, whether you're a believer or not, whether you're Gentile or Jewish or Martian, it doesn't really matter as long as you want to come. And I see my function as twofold. One, to teach Jews about the Jewishness of the Brit Chadashah, or the New Covenant, that Yeshua or Jesus is indeed Jewish, mm-hmm. and you're not changing DNA when you come to faith in the right. Messiah. And at the same time, teaching the Gentiles who come, the Christians who come, that Yeshua did not start a new religion. He was not a Gentile. He did not eliminate Hebrew. He did not abolish the Old Testament, and how really we're supposed to be one body together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I call it Word of Peace, because there's been so much struggle between Jewish believers and Gentile believers or non-Jewish believers right. over who's right, who's wrong. The point is, it's the word of God, and we're supposed to be together.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it a congregation or
We are what we call a Havara group, which is like a smaller fellowship.
Yeah.
Devar Shalom has associate membership in the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations, but we don't qualify for full-fledged synagogue membership. And, you know, and it's a passion and it's grown. It started, as I said, as a Bible study, then to a once a month service, then to a twice a month service And in with all of that, I have now published 3 books and I have speaking tours, and what's a nice Jewish girl like me doing in a place like this? You know, how does this even work? But it does.
That's exciting. How long have you been in existence as Devar Shalom?
6 years that since we actually got the nonprofit, you know, and separated ourselves out from being a church Bible study. Even when we grew and started meeting on Friday nights, the church in which we are housed, because we use their facilities, still was our covering, and they saw us as part of them.
Okay.
Which was fine. It gave me freedom to do all sorts of things without worrying about the finances.
Yeah.
But now that we are fully, you know, a nonprofit and a separate entity, we still meet there, but we don't function under their covering per se. Mm-hmm. However, that senior pastor serves on my board.
Okay. That's really nice.
I love him. He and his wife are from Holland. They met over here, but they're both Dutch and were both born in Holland. The pastor's family helped rescue Jews during the war and worked with the underground, you know.
Yeah.
And he has a heart and a passion for Israel and the Jewish people. He and his wife, out of their own personal funds, paid for a Russian Jewish family to get out and make Aliyah.
Oh, wow.
And for a whole family to do that, that's quite expensive.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, if you're putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
It's real. And I have such favor there. So I'm still there in terms of, you know, where we meet. And some of the church members come on our Friday night group.
Okay.
Even though they know we are separate now, they still come and they contribute and they ask questions, and that's fine. It's wonderful.
Oh, that's really exciting. So how did you go from coming to faith in Yeshua to being a leader of this amazing ministry?
Well, have you ever heard the Bible verse, a little cat shall lead them? I know the actual verse is child, but it was funny. When I first became a believer, of course, and it was a Gentile friend, a Christian friend that led me to the Lord, I became very involved in churches. And, you know, went around through different churches and denominations, eventually becoming involved in children's ministry. I became a youth pastor, you know, over the years, all sorts of things. But then all of a sudden, perhaps not all of a sudden to the Lord, I felt that he was pulling me out of all of these leadership positions. And I was one by one giving up different things, going to the pastor and saying, it's time to give this up. And it hit me. Lord, are you pulling me out of this church? There's not another one around here that I want to attend. You're going to have to give me a sign. And in a sense, it was very similar to, God, if you exist, prove it.
Yeah.
This one was, well, you know, scripture says the Jews ask for a sign. So Lord, you got to give me something on what I'm to do. I don't know where I'm to go. I don't know. I can't believe my life as a believer is over. So what is this? Well, I'm an animal lover and I have cats. And the next morning I had to take one of them to the vet just for his shots and stuff.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. And I knew that the vet had moved his office to a new industrial park. And so I'm following, before cell phones, I'm following the directions I had printed out and trying to get there and figure out where it was. And I pulled up, found the industrial park, drove around, found his office, parked directly in front of his office. And as I got out of the car, opened the driver's door and turned, there was a sign that said Kehillat Mashiach Messianic Jewish Synagogue. And I said, God, do you have to take me quite so literally when I said I wanted a sign? So I wrote the phone number down. And when I got home, I called expecting an answering machine. Well, what happened was, is that the rabbi and his wife had the number transferred to their home number when they weren't there. So the the Rebbetzin, the rabbi's wife, picked up the phone and just said hello. And my heart sank, thinking maybe they were out of, you know, out of business or whatever, because I was hoping to find like their service times and things like that.
Right.
And as I was ready to hang up, she goes, oh, are you calling the synagogue? And I said, yes. And then she explained. So the following Shabbat, I showed up, I walked in and I burst into tears. It was like, this is what I'm to do. This is what I'm to do. And then on a funny note, because you know the some of the people involved, when Monique Brumbach, who's now the executive director of the union and the rabbi's wife at your synagogue, and I first met, they were out in LA, and she was asking me my history in the movement. And I told her about that synagogue. And I said, Tom and Phyllis Blackburn, do you know them? And she said, no, but I know their kids really well. And I said, I babysat those kids. Monique's mother and I are only 6 months apart in age. So that was really kind of, I don't know, a come to the reality moment for me that I am getting older. But yes,
because you don't have kids to judge time by. I find I do that all the time.
Well, I work with children or I've worked with them, but it's still not the same. And so, yeah, Monique is the same age as kids I once babysat. Yeah. So it's kind of freaky to me, but that's okay. That's how I got involved. And as I learned more, the rabbi and his wife were kind and gracious. And they said, we know you've been in leadership, but you don't know Messianic Judaism. You know Judaism and you know Christianity. Right. You don't know what we are. We see leadership potential, but we want you to be with us at least 6 months to a year and really immerse yourself, which is the right thing to do, you know, because I didn't know what they were doing. And eventually then, yes, I started to teach Shabbat school. I got on the sisterhood board. I started leading youth and I got very involved. Eventually that family left and made Aliyah. They moved to Israel. And subsequent to that, the various people that took it over, it just didn't work out, shall we say. And that synagogue no longer exists, which is sad, but it is true. So not knowing what to do, and there's not another synagogue close to me, I wound up being a wandering Jew for a while, and then back in the church world, just so that I would have some form of fellowship and covering. And then I was asked if I would teach a Bible study about the Jewish background of the Gospels, just of the four books, the four Gospels. And I prayed about it, and God said, you've been seeking me for what you're supposed to do. So my servant comes and asks you to do something, and now you're wondering? Oi. Yes, God. He knows I have a thick skull, so he always has to show me things very. So I started teaching and became more and more involved. That pastor really encouraged me to go within the denomination for ordination because of credibility.
Okay.
He said, I want to introduce you, he says, to other pastors to speak at their churches and to do other things. And if I just say, hey, Susie's really good, but if I say she has credentials with our organization, and he was right, it did open many doors for me to share in other places. And from that, I was asked to teach in a Bible Institute. And then from that, people came up to me afterwards and said, what are you going to do on a regular basis? So I went into the pastor's office. I made an appointment and I said, I need to talk to you. And he looked at me and he said, the answer is yes. And I said, I haven't asked the question. He said, well, your question is, can you start a Messianic ministry here? And the answer is yes. And I said, how did you know? And he goes, you're not the only one God speaks to. And I laughed. And then when it was time to move from once a month to more frequently, I went in, he said, yes, God spoke to me. Yeah. So I have such favor. And that's how Devar Shalom was born. And then the first book I wrote, called Matityahu, which is Hebrew for Matthew, is based on the Gospel of Matthew, because I asked a gentleman I know in Christian publishing, said, when are you going to put out a Bible that uses the real names?
Yeah.
And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, for example, he and I both have a mutual friend who's a missionary in Japan, but he's Hispanic and his name is Juan. Juan mm-hmm. Carlos.
Right.
That when Juan comes by and we visit with him, we don't call him John Charles because he's right. You know, we call him his real name.
Right.
So, yeah. Why don't we call Yeshua his real name? Why don't we call the different Bible characters
yeah.
and places their real names?
Yeah.
If we have as much respect for Juan, why don't we do that for the Bible? And he goes, well, you want to write something like that? Do it. So I wrote Matthew Yahoo. I used the King James because most Gentiles are at least familiar with it, even if, and being public domain, I didn't need anybody's permission.
Right.
And then every place there was a proper noun in parentheses, I put the Hebrew word and what that word means.
Okay.
Then at the end of each chapter, I wrote what those meanings tell us.
Okay.
For example, at the end of chapter 2, when we get all of the places, okay, Yeshua was born in Beit Lechem, or house of bread. He was taken into Mitzrayim, place of constriction or bondage. You know, he grew up in Nazareth, you know, guardian. He ministered in Capernaum, village of comfort, and took us to Jerusalem, you know, place of eternal peace, place of his peace. So the bread of life came like manna from heaven to be born into the house of bread, Beit Lechem. Mm-hmm. Bethlehem, to go into bondage so he could pull us out, minister to us in comfort, and take us to peace.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And you get that when you know the meanings of the words.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what Matthew Yahoo was and or is. And then I've written a couple of more since then, and here we are.
That's fantastic. When did you write your first book?
Well, the first book was Matthew Yahoo. And then when did I write
it? Yeah.
It was probably about 7 years ago, okay. 6 years ago. And then about 4 years ago, I wrote my second one called God is in the Waiting, which is a devotional. Mm. And then excellent. Just 6 months ago, my third one was published called Unity of the Faith, which is exactly that, trying to show Jewish believers or Jews that mm-hmm. Brit Hadashah and all of this is okay, and showing the Christians that what the real roots of everything is, and trying to take it out of that Greek context and put it back into the Hebrew context of what Yeshua was really saying.
Yeah. What can you tell me about how your faith in Yeshua and your Jewish identity informs how you walk out your life?
Well, my worldview is, I would call biblical, you know? And so when I look at things, whether it be how I handle my personal responses to the current pandemic or what I deal with in politics or how I interact with people, it truly is, what is scripture telling me that I need to do?
Mm-hmm.
And if I disagree with somebody, okay, what is scripture telling me about how I need to interact with that person? Can we have dialogue rather than a fight? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how I live my life. And then, as I said, I'm also a dwarf. You know, I'm only 4'1". So that has certainly impacted me too. And years ago in the church world, I went deep into Mexico, about 7 hours south of the border, with a group that I was invited to go to. And I had no clue why, because they were passing out 50-pound bags of beans and rice and stuff. And I knew I couldn't do that.
Right.
But as we were down there, all these kids started following me. I felt like I was the Pied Piper.
Wow.
You know, because most of them hadn't seen Caucasians. And then yeah. to see me, they had never, you know, so they were following. Finally, I found a child that was with our group from the States, who could speak Spanish, and she found a kid who could speak both Spanish and the native Indian dialect that that group spoke. And I sat down and I shared about Messiah. 17 kids came to faith.
Oh, wow.
And I burst into tears, and God said to me very, very clearly, you will lead people, not in spite of, but sometimes it will be because of the way I created you.
Mm.
And that whole experience, you know, I thought I was going to go help out, maybe throw some money at the ministry if, you know, if it looked yeah. good kind of thing.
Yeah.
And instead God said, ha ha, I used you with those kids, and ha ha, I'm going to radically change how you view things. And so, yeah, that was definitely a pivotal moment in my life.
Wow. What are some of the challenges that you have as a woman, as a single woman, as a dwarf, with it? I mean, just in general or within the Messianic movement, whatever you wish to talk about.
Sure. Well, you know, there are people who believe that women shouldn't be teaching men. Fortunately, the denomination of the church with which, you know, I've been involved does not believe that. And in fact, one of the things I was required to read for my ordination preparation was a book called Women in Ordained Leadership Ministry. It was put together by a man named Jack Hayford, if you've heard of him.
Yeah, used to listen to his stuff all the time.
Yeah, and he was president of the denomination at the time. And he had different men write each chapter. And when I spoke to him once, he said, I only had men write because if I had women write it, men would have thrown it out. But I had very well-respected men write each chapter about how we take Paul's writings out of context and what they really do mean. And absolutely, women should be, you know, in leadership.
Yeah.
And so for that, at least I have. Some people, not all, some have issues with the fact that I'm single. Just because, well, then who do you go to? I said, well, I make sure I have spiritual covering. I have the pastor of the church in which my ministry meets. I have, in fact, your rabbi, Rabbi Joshua, who I asked to be my Jewish leadership covering, and he agreed. I have others on my board, and I don't make decisions, you know, about anything without contacting them.
Right.
And, you know, I make sure that I'm covered, but then I don't care even if you're a man, you should have some sort of accountability.
Right.
So I do that. You know, I look at things a little bit differently. I want to share just something very, very brief. I know we're probably running out of time.
No, go ahead.
Okay. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 20 and 21, we read, now in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but of wood and clay, some for honor and some for common use. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from these, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified, useful to the master, prepared for any good work. And I'm reading that out of the Tree of Life version. The interesting thing is, I look at that passage a little bit differently. Most people think the vessels of honor are those really good dishes, you know, the ones of gold and silver.
Right.
But I look at it a bit differently. You know, I have some good china dishes and they're in a nice china cabinet and I don't use them that often. Mm. And then I have my regular dishes with chips and cracks and a couple of pieces missing, but I use every day.
Right.
And they become their comfort. You know, when I am feeling down and I pull out a favorite bowl or something and put in some soup and it might have a little chip or a ding, but I remember whatever with it, then there's comfort.
Yeah.
Like there's comfort food. These are familiar and I don't have to be on my very best behavior to not drop something that's expensive or whatever.
Right.
And I look at this and I want to be a piece of fine china upon the shelf, taken out only for special occasions, or do I want to be someone who's used by the Lord every day?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, then that means that those regular everyday dishes are the ones of honor because they're the ones the Lord uses all the time with chips and crafts. So I tell people I want to be a craft pot for the Lord.
My mom would like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
But that's how I look at it. I, you know, Jewish, a dwarf, you know, single, my age, all of these things. And I'm going, yeah, I'm a cracked pot for the Lord.
Thank you so much, Susie, for sharing with us. Before we wrap up, I think this feels like a really natural spot to wrap up. I have a couple of questions for you, just sort of like, just off the top of your head. So in Messianic music, do you have a favorite song or a favorite musician that you like to listen to or something that's very meaningful to you?
Wow. Interestingly enough, before I was a believer and my Gentile friend who was the psychiatric nurse knew she had to find Jewish things for me, drove into LA one day to the Los Angeles branch of Jews for Jesus, because that's the only thing she knew about.
Right.
To grab whatever she could that they would give her to help her, because she knew nothing, but she knew she had to reach me that way. And she got a bunch of tapes, cassette mm-hmm. tapes from Lamb. I don't know if you know yep. who they yep. were. Once upon a time, way back years yep. ago, they were a musical group, the Chernoffs. And she got me actual cassette tapes from them. And I remember playing them in my car when you still had a cassette player in your car.
Yes.
Going to and from work. And so that was the first messianic music mm-hmm. that I had ever heard. You know, and then Liberated Wailing Wall yep. with Stuart Dowerman was involved, and others well known that I've gotten to know since then.
Yeah.
But that was where I cut my teeth on messianic music.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. Since then, you know, there are so many. I love Marty Goetz. I love yeah. Paul Wilbur. I love a lot of the people we all know. Next month, I'm going to be at a gathering, and I'll be listening to Debbie and Vince Klein, Ian Turner, if you know them. Amazing musicians, Deborah mm-hmm. Klein and Ian Turner, and Vince Ian Turner, her husband,
okay.
have a wonderful, wonderful music ministry. Shir Hadash, which okay. means... which means new song. And I love their music. And Deb is Jewish, but also grew up in Puerto Rico. So she also has some of her music out in Spanish for
oh, that's
those.
Nice.
And it's wonderful. Anyway, so yeah, there's plenty that I absolutely adore.
That's great. Thank you. And what is bringing you joy right now?
Knowing that I am doing what the Lord wants me to do. Mm. That doesn't mean that every day and every moment of every day is filled with laughter.
Right.
I am human and I do have all the rest of the range of emotions. But there is just something when you know that you're doing what God put you on the planet to do.
Yeah.
Then even if things don't turn out exactly the way you think they will, okay, Lord, but if this is what you are wanting me to do, it helps me walk through it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
How can our listeners find you if they want to get in touch with you?
A couple of ways. I do have a website, devarshalom.org, devarshalom, you know, it's strung together, .org.
Yep.
And on that website, there will be a way to contact me via email, or you can listen, if you click to the podcast page, you can listen to audio podcasts, watch a few videos. You can find the Devar Shalom Facebook page or the Susie Lynette Facebook page. You know, I'm out there, so you can find me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you again.
Okay. Thank you so much for this time. It was great to be here.
Thanks for joining me on this journey. If you are enjoying this podcast, please subscribe and share with others. If you want to get in touch with Susie, you can find her at www.devarshalom.org. That's devarshalom.org. You can also follow her on Facebook. You can follow me at This Messianic Life on Instagram and Facebook. You can find links in the show notes. Let's connect next time on This Messianic Life.